Can make it a spotlight.
Don't make me do this.
And then drum roll, please. Hello and welcome to episode 440 of Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
And hello everyone, I'm Scotto.
And I love that, I mean, we'll see what we think of this movie, but I love that we're doing a musical for episode 440. 440 Hertz is A. So
okay.
It's a musical thing, so I love that we're doing a musical on episode 440. But before we get to this week's movie, we've got some front matter to get through. First off, I just wanted to announce that there will be no YouTube versions of our shows until I'm back up and around, because I tried to upload to YouTube last week and it crashed my browser. I'm working with a 10-year-old Mac Mini here, so
it has limitations. So if you are listening to this, despite us not being on YouTube, can you pass the word for us, maybe? Yeah.
But the audio podcasts on zombietakeout.com and johnscotto.com and on iTunes, unaffected, those will go on as usual. Speaking of, well, the one movie related front matter I have, the other day, yesterday, I saw that one of the greatest comedies ever made is now streaming on YouTube for free with ads. It's a mad, 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 mad world.
Did we ever review that?
We've never reviewed it.
Probably because it's too goddamn long.
Hour 50, actually.
Really?
I watched it yesterday. Actually, I watched half of it yesterday, half today.
I know why. Because when we back in the day when we'd watch it on broadcast television with commercials,
right?
Which should mean like 2.5 hours.
Well, this had ads, but it weren't as long as TV ads. But it's like 1 hour 50 on YouTube. Holds up pretty well.
Oh yeah.
And there's a surprisingly little in it that's problematic, even though it was made in 63. I was impressed. So definitely check that out if you've never seen it.
That was like a family New Year's Eve tradition. Uh-huh. Like after midnight, we'd fucking start it. Yeah.
Some of the best stunt work you'll ever see.
Oh, the scene with Jonathan Winters and like the two, I can't remember the brother's name in the gas shop.
Yeah. Oh, God,
Just a masterpiece of a scene. Yeah. Like if I were teaching a filmmaking class, you'd have to watch that scene in that class.
My favorite part is toward the end when you see the trees in the background and they're just walking past them.
Oh yeah.
Love that. Trying not to give too much away, of course. Also, last week we were discussing the DC animated universe because you said you wanted to catch up on it.
Well, maybe. It's the only thing I have available to me.
Well, the
animated universe. The animated
universe. The animated stuff is great. And it's all on HBO Max.
Yes. I'll probably get to start on that after my Hulu trial is done.
DC's separate streaming thing didn't work out. It's all on HBO Max now. Another thing that's on a paid streaming service that I have to recommend, superhero related, actually all of this is superhero related aside from Madman World, a series called Invincible just launched on Amazon Prime based on a comic.
I was going to say the name sounds really familiar and I can't remember.
Long running comic, absolutely brilliant. Some of the best animation, it's not CG, it looks very traditional cell. Gets very fucking dark and serious at points, but the lighter moments really remind me of The Tick. And the Tick animated series, which I fucking adored back in the day. You've seen The Tick, right?
I've seen some of it, yeah.
The final thing, a final bit of front matter, The Tick is streaming on Amazon free with ads.
Oh, wow.
All three seasons. If you've never seen The Tick, you need to watch it. It is the greatest superhero fiction ever made. Because it completely takes the piss out of superheroes.
And yet here we are, still wading through superheroes.
Invincible, definitely a lot smarter than most superhero fiction. Definitely check that out. And the tech is just a fucking masterpiece. I watched the first episode. Can't do plaid. Still has me rolling. You get the. Have you seen the can't do plaid bit?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
There's a bit in the first episode where all of these bizarre superheroes roll out, and one of them is the chameleon. And as he's jumping from surface to surface, turning different colors, he jumps onto, I think it's like a billboard that has plaid. He tries to go plaid, just completely freezes out, says, "Can't do plaid," and falls off. That gives you an idea of the sense of humor of the show.
Right.
Anyway, finally, on to this week's movie, which is from 2019, Cats. This is, of course, our April Fool's Day episode.
AKA suffering for our art.
Yeah, we had I thought of it in time, had I remembered, we could have had a proper April Fool's Day episode because I found out about 50 minutes ago, 550, that Godzilla versus Kong premiered today. It would have been tight, but we could have watched that and, swerved everybody.
I mean, if they're listeners new to us somehow, we have a long history of some very strange April Fool's Day episodes.
I think the last time we did a proper April Fool's Day episode was the last time we pranked ourselves.
Yeah, and then we realized
because we skipped it
we're
for a few
done.
years. Anyway, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by CGI. Just because you can, that doesn't mean that you should. Although in this case,
And also brought to you by Logan's Run. How stupid were these cats to think that the topside carousel was a good thing? All right, so this is a pretty easy plot summary, isn't it?
really, I don't envy you this week because I had trouble following this plot.
Well, I mean, if you did, deduct the introductions from this, it's a
True.
very, very short plot. We have a cat who is thrown, cast out from her family, and she's taken in by this gang of cats who like to say their name, the Jellicle Cats,
They say it a lot.
like say it a fucking lot.
And in case anybody's tempted to Google, Jellicle means nothing. T.S. Eliot made it up.
It's a hell of a drug. Morphine's an incredible drug. So yeah, and if you can probably hear my twitch as I'm reciting this movie. So yeah, she's taken in by the Jellicle Cats, and they have this tradition where a old Deuteronomy, this leader of the organization or gang, chooses one cat to go onto the top side, which means they get to go and have another life. And so
Or
there
do
is
they? Is it kind of like going to the farm?
that, well, exactly. It's a con. But anyway, they all still believe it. The illusion is never broken in this movie that this is a good thing because everybody's competing for it. And in fact, they really sell you on it being a good thing because there is a bad cat who really wants to be picked.
Idris
They're
Elba gotta
all,
eat.
yeah, yes. You could see the paycheck sticking out of the back fur, and he's doing all these dirty tricks and kidnapping the competition to eliminate them. And he's well, it comes down to him and this older woman cat, who of course is very wistful of a time past, and for that reason, she's chosen to die.
And
And hilarity ensues.
that is, to me, the brilliance of this story, and one of the reasons I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the movie, I'm just going to say that right off. By the way, just in case anybody's wondering why my voice gets a little louder now and then, I'm wearing my iPod headphones, and both my computer mic and the headphone mics are active, but if I just use the headphone mic, Scott can't hear me, so I am occasionally will lean into the wrong mic. Anyway, the thing that I really appreciate that this movie is that they're all competing to die. That's so fucking twisted.
It is very strange. And there is some sort of, I don't know, cat Jesus eternal life thing going on here.
This is, of course, based on the 1981 Tony Award-winning stage musical of the same name by Andrew Lloyd Webber. Bear in mind, Webber does nothing that isn't big, loud, and ridiculous.
But this is the granddaddy, though. This is what made Broadway what Broadway is now.
Of
Good or
course, and
bad.
in turn, the musical was based on the poetry, a poetry collection by T.S. Eliot called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. Why can't I write ridiculous poetry like that? I
And from
have
what
to
I
write about
understand,
feelings and shit.
this I one of the shocking things I found out before we recorded doing my research, the poem was not public domain when they did this.
Oh, wow.
So the Elliott
The
estate
state
has
sued the
made
rest.
millions off
Oh,
this.
fuck.
In fact, it is what has set up the T.S. Eliot Literary Prize
Oh,
is
wow.
from the proceeds from this. And then there was some old publishing company that was kind of one of the few indie publishing companies that was barely in business when all of a sudden this became a multi-billion dollar thing, and they make like
Oh,
$100 million in
wow.
like a few years, and they're like setting up their own musical from their own properties by the end of the 80s.
I kind of like it even more now.
It's an insane thing what happened here, because this, I mean, to say this musical was revolutionary is an understatement, good or bad, because a lot of people think like it's the superhero movie equivalent of what Broadway, is doing
Yeah.
done.
This did for Broadway what the MCU did for comic book movies.
But this is even greater, I think, because like regional theaters, like
Yeah,
all that
true.
the touring companies
Right,
and
right.
everything, like this had like extended stay tours. This really just began all of that stuff. Like normally you would have a musical come in, it's going to be in for a week and it's gone. This did the no. If we sell enough tickets, we'll stay for as long as it sells tickets. So you could have it there for a month, for months or a year or two even.
And I have to wonder, and I've never seen it on stage. I've actually seen very few musicals, and they were all at schools. But I have to wonder if the people who went to see it and absolutely loved the musical, because there are people who are fanatical about the musical, are seeing it as the unintentional comedy that I am. Because right from the beginning, this was a brilliant unintentional comedy to me.
I don't know how. I didn't see the musical. I haven't seen a production itself. In fact, I think this was my first time sitting all the way through the soundtrack. I had some people back in the day try to convert me on it, and I thought it sounded like shit, and I was right.
I knew Memories, which is a beautiful song. Love Memories.
Yes.
And the Mr. Mistopheles song I've heard in the ads, and that's about
Right.
it.
I was explaining that to Mrs. Scotto, who dutifully sat through this with me for some reason. I'm not sure why. But I was explaining that living in the New York, New Jersey area, we had Broadway ads that lasted years. I mean, well, think about it. Cats itself ran on Broadway for 18 years. Think
Damn.
about that. 18 years, 7,500 performances.
Damn.
And then in London, it ran for 21.
And those ads were in heavy rotation.
Yes. I mean, there are musicals, of course, that bombed that they advertised the fuck out of that I can remember to this day. And it's like they just imprint your brain and you're just like, why?
And that's about 90% of the reason I know Webber only does big, loud, and ridiculous, because I saw the ads for all of them. I mean, I know a bunch of theater geeks and a bunch of musical people, but I haven't really talked to them about it because I don't actually know the musicals. But this movie really kind of shows off how ridiculous musicals as a whole are.
Like I said, this is the granddaddy. I mean, he did like Evita and Superstar, Jesus Christ Superstar before this, but this is where it was kind of like, are you nuts doing a musical on this?
I
And
mean, musicals existed before this. They go back centuries.
Of
They're the
course.
basis of pop music. But Weber brought the spectacle.
This was a totally different way of, just technologically putting a play on.
Here's an analogy that I think is apt, although I kind of hate myself for it. Weber was the George Lucas of musicals.
It's a very apt comparison. Somebody had said that it was like he came up with a way of the way he was changing scenes. It was like a fast cut in a film almost, and no one had done that before. And the Lucas thing, there were regional theaters that they made upgrade their sound systems and light, I guess, settings so they could play there. Like they made them upgrade the theater upgrade. So Lucas did the same thing with digital projectors in the prequels too.
And back to the movie. Because I have to comment on the naming scene, the scene where they list all the names and the
It
first
was
time.
like the first hour, you mean?
Well, no, the initial naming scene at the gates when Victoria, the new cat, is trying to get in.
Right.
Because it looked like a Bonnie Tyler video. They're in this graveyard at these gates and kind of dancing around Victoria. By the way, for the first like hour and a half, I thought Taylor Swift played Victoria until Taylor Swift showed up and I recognized her. It turns out Francesca Hayward, a ballerina, actually played Victoria. Good actor and decent singer for a ballerina. Brilliant dancer, of course. Speaking of which, I really couldn't tell if the dancing was kind of hot or deeply disturbing.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your degree of furry. Because
But
let's be honest, that's what this is really about, isn't it?
then we get the mice, which I was not prepared for.
It was about this in 1981, honestly, the furry. They just didn't know that's what it was called back
I
then.
mean, the costumes don't look that different if you compare the musical and the movie.
I think the 80s, it was more about the unitard thing. Here, it's like a CGI
Well,
thing,
yeah,
which.
they went from unitards to CG. That's about it. But the concepts are very similar, and it just takes itself so seriously, and it's so ridiculous. I just had to love it.
Now, it takes itself seriously on one hand, but on the other hand, they never upgrade any of the music or update any of the
No,
music. I mean, I understand you can't mess with some of these things because Memories is like
classic.
it's like one of the most recorded songs in the English language, probably, and probably recorded in other languages too. But I'm talking about like the keyboard sounds.
Because I suspect the target demo, aside from furries, was the musical cult. The
True.
people who were just obsessed with the stage version and would not have accepted any deviation.
Well, the thing is, there was like a direct-to-video version of this that was, faithful to the theater back in like 98. And I think they could have gotten a lot more pop if they had brought in, I don't know, if they had updated it to try to release, to make the music fit in with the time
Oh, yeah.
now.
It's just, I think people would have revolted if it sounded different than it did back in the 80s.
Right, you can't stray too far, but you can get rid of the stupid metallic sounding keyboard that
True.
I'm sure was really cool back in
Of
1981,
course.
but pretty lame now in 2021.
And while watching the whole thing, I couldn't help imagining how ridiculous it all looked before the CG.
Were they in green
I would
suits or
imagine
something?
so. They
Like
were
what?
probably all in green. And then when I said I was prepared for the mice, then we get the roaches, even funnier. And I got to give them props for the milk bar reference.
Do
I
you
don't
think
know if
that's what
they
it was?
intended. I don't know if they intended to reference Clockwork, but I'm hoping they did.
Because I thought of it too, first thing. And you know what? I mean, a lot of this was inspired by Logan's Run, honestly.
Yeah, And I wouldn't put it past Weber. And I don't know if there was a milk bar in the musical, but I wouldn't put it past Weber to sneak in a Clockwork reference.
Because there's a timeline here. The Logan's Run movie references this T.S. Eliot poem in 76. He starts workshopping the music in 77.
Oh, okay. So he may have seen Logan's Run and like, wait, what
And
is that poem? And then like looked up the Eliot poem and got inspired.
yes, it was wrapped with a bow together, placed in his lap, and he just ran with it. And well, I mean, of course, there's the whole, a lot of this was popular because of the technical, wizardry, which it's wizardry for if you're there in the theater in 1981, not so much if you're seeing it on a movie screen.
Incidentally, I've read bits and pieces of the poem. It makes about as much sense as Jabberwocky.
I mean, it's the lyrics. He uses them as lyrics for a lot of the songs. So if you can make heads or tails out of those lyrics, I was like trying to get the closed captioning to work on my HBO Max, and it just wasn't helping me out.
All due respect to T.S. Eliot, he was brilliant. He wrote some amazing stuff. This was not one of them.
And yet it made his
And yet
descendants
it's probably his best known piece.
hundreds of millions of dollars.
Now, I'm not sure if this is a criticism of the movie or not, but Jennifer Hudson was just way too good for this insanity.
I'll spoil. Mrs. Scotto gave it a brain only because of her.
She earned it a half a brain for me that I then had to take away in the last scene. But she was amazing. Jennifer Hudson singing Memories is honestly, I don't care what you think of the rest of it, worth the price. Look it up on YouTube. Also, I never knew that the penguin was a cat. And apparently he wasn't neutered. James Corden's character looks a lot like the penguin.
Out of all the people in this movie, he's probably the one I have lost the most respect for.
Really?
Well, there's a little like context to all this. And normally I'm not one to go on the whole fat, Malcolm X
Of course.
crusade kind of thing. But when you're James Corden, and a couple months before this comes out, Bill Maher did some insensitive fat shaming bit, and he did this tearful defense on his show that sort of went semi-viral. Really, of course, he's just looking to promote this movie,
Of
most
course.
likely. But he made this big stand about it and just, was, like I said, nearly in tears. And then you see him do this movie where he's pretty much
One big fat yoke.
a fat fetch and step it, pretty much. And it's like, so you would have been cool with Mars material if he paid you for it.
Yeah, exactly.
If he paid you to do it, you'd have no problem with it,
Okay, yeah,
because that's what he did here.
that's fair. And the orgiastic eating scene that ended his bit in the movie somehow made it even more disturbing.
Oh yeah, totally. I'd kind of, I mean, Rebel Wilson kind of, has done, this herself. No problem there.
She's
She's
kind
done
of her
this shtick
shtick.
before, right? Although it's kind of like, huh, kind of. But when I saw him doing it, it was kind of like, fuck this guy.
And then there's a scene where Victoria breaks away from the main group and ends up hanging out with these two thieves. I like the theft scenes in movie in stories. I like the suspense of them. They're fun. But singing cats just takes all of that away.
The chimney sweep cats, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Aye, governor.
They killed all of the suspense in a thieving scene.
Of course,
And it's hard to kill a thieving scene for me.
a thieving scene's only good if there's some actual suspense that they might get caught. It's too early in the musical. You know they're not going to get caught.
And just the singing in general and the overall tone just ruin the suspense of it.
Yeah, they're just casually there and nothing can harm them.
And that Jellicle chant just really sounded culty,
Oh
especially with the
yeah,
following
totally.
dance number.
Oh, the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I was disappointed that Victoria ended up with Annoying Nice Guy Cat, aka Mr. Mistopheles.
I thought you were talking about the other guy who really should have been played by Jim Carrey,
The
honestly.
narrator.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I've been the magician, Mistopheles. Almost said Mr. Mephistopheles, which would have made it much better.
Which, I mean, come on, there's got to be like something
Oh,
about that. Mistopheles, Mephistopheles.
incidentally, sidetrack, because I just happened to think of it. I saw the Lil Nas X video today. Definitely
Oh,
check it out.
really? I mean, I've
The new
heard
one.
things, I've
Yeah,
seen clips, but
definitely check it out. It's
I'd
worth
have
it.
to sit through a Lil Nas X song, though. And
It's
I've
not
already
bad.
sat through an hour and 50
It's
minutes of this bullshit.
not bad. Anyway, back to the movie, of course.
Back to the movie.
Then there was just in this big dance number, these cats who were pop locking, possibly the saddest part of the movie. Because I like pop locking. And just to see it reduced to that was no. And Memories just sounded so damn good, it just didn't fit. And it made the CG look even more absurd. Because, Jennifer Hudson there singing her ass off, dressed up like a cat, CG'd like a cat.
Yeah.
It's just,
Now,
no.
Memories, or Memory, I think, is
Okay,
actually the name
Memory.
of the song, I think. I
Okay.
don't know why I keep
I
calling
think
it
you're right.
Memories, but really, that is the only difference between this and his next, Weber's next thing, Starlight Express, which
Yeah, well, that was just roller disco.
overseas, Starlight Express was a pretty big hit too. In the U.S., it for years was synonymous with pretty much Heaven's Gate or Ishtar for musicals.
I remember the ads, and it just seemed like over the top roller disco.
Well, it's to say like a bunch of them competing over something or other. I mean, and that's pretty much what the plot is here, only now it's cats instead of trains.
And then Sir Ian McKellen shows up. One
With
of
the
my
paycheck
abs,
sticking out of his back for her as
him
well.
too. One of my absolute favorites. I was thinking, oh God, I hope he doesn't sing, because I honestly don't know if Ian McKellen can sing.
He did a little bit though, didn't
Oh,
he?
his song is one of the few parts that I legit unironically enjoyed.
Huh.
I loved his song. I loved any time Jennifer Hudson was singing, of course. And I loved the solo dance done by the railway cat, the super gay one in the red pants. I can't think of his name. Something Shanks.
The village cats?
No, the red pants
No,
rail
just
cat.
that was a bad joke.
Strump Shanks or something like that. He was incredibly gay, but
They
he.
honestly should have had the village people in
But
this.
he did a tap number that was really good before the rest of the group joined in.
Oh, right. I remember, and I was sitting there thinking, like, it's so old school to do like a dance number like that in a movie, but is it just like something we could see on TikTok these days? Like, what is really the point of doing this in a movie anymore?
But like Francesca Hayward, the guy who did that played that character, can't think of his name offhand, is like Royal Ballet.
Yeah.
So, he's just, that level of a dancer. I love watching great dance. So that got me. Same thing with Francesca. I loved any time she was dancing. And not just because of the CG. But
I kind of just felt, I felt bad for McKellen, and I felt bad for Dench too. But I mean, they knew what they were getting into,
Of
really.
course.
And I'm sure they made a pretty good check
Yeah,
off
I'm
this.
sure. But about halfway through, during Sir Ian's song, I was starting to wonder if I was like beginning to legitimately like it. And then he stopped singing, he stopped doing a song, and it just goes straight back to the ridiculous unintentional comedy. I'm like, okay, no, I'm not legit liking it. Then we get Taylor Swift's scene.
Cat rave.
Full disclosure, I have a bit of a thing for Taylor Swift. I think she's extremely
Really?
attractive. So she comes down singing this sexy blues song on a crescent moon in a cat suit. I had very mixed feelings.
I think she's about as interesting as a jar of mayonnaise, honestly.
I think she's talented. Her music is not at all my cup of tea. I'm not a fan of her music. I think she's very talented, and I find her very attractive, that's all. But
And I, for the life of me, do not know how she's been around this long. I understand the early days, but I'm just kind of surprised that the kids' kids are still they're down to it, you know?
she's made some good choices, and she is a legitimately talented singer. And she's made some very good choices career-wise. But that's when I realized that Taylor Swift was playing that cat who had like one scene and we didn't see her again, and not playing Francesca. So I had to look up who was playing Francesca. Because then she sings like right after Jennifer Hudson, Francesca does. And I'm thinking it was Taylor. I'm like, wow, I've underestimated Taylor's voice. But no, it was Francesca. She's not better than Jennifer Hudson, but she holds her own. Speaking of singing, Idris Elba, as much as I respect him as an actor, should never be allowed to sing in public again.
Ah, he's got to eat.
And then he threatened Deuteronomy, with, who was played by Judi Dench, had her walk the plank and all. That should have been much better with Dench and Elba, but there was just no. It just did the drama just wasn't there with
No.
two amazing actors.
And originally, if I'm not mistaken, Deuteronomy has been historically played by like a large dude.
Right. And I'm perfectly cool with that choice. And if you're gonna put, a woman in that role, Judi Dench is an amazing choice.
Very true.
But I don't know if it was the ridiculousness of the costuming or the script or what, but it just didn't. There should have been more tension between those two.
Yeah, but you can't really generate tension in this.
That's true. That's true. And that's when I started to wonder if, Griselda's ascension was actually her death. Yeah, it is. And props to Jennifer Hudson. Like, not only, of course, she's an amazing vocalist, but she sang like two songs, did Memory twice, and then sang another song first. Completely sold her character. Had like two words of dialogue. She said thank you at the end. That is her only spoken dialogue in the movie. She
I
just
mean,
sang.
I kind of thought it was laid on a little too thick, but that's just me, of course.
Yeah. The ending was almost moving, but then it had to get ridiculous again.
Oh.
When they're watching her ascend.
Another fucking chandelier, too. I mean, this one's going up, Phantom hit coming down.
Fucking crystals.
Fucking crystals.
And I was okay, this is okay. I like this ending, and then Dench's final song just took away that half a brain that Jennifer Hudson bought it.
Yeah, that it was
Now, a bit of trivia. This was almost like traditionally animated, but then director Tom Hopper got involved and decided to do CG. On December 21st, 2019, a mere 2 days after its release, Universal Pictures announced that it would be releasing a new version with updated CG at an undisclosed time. I can't help wondering if this is the infamous butthole cut.
There were some pretty close shots where that was possible.
Apparently, in an early version, the cat CGI was more anatomically correct. And the movie grossed 75 million with a budget of 80 million, 80 to 100 million, and is estimated to have lost Universal Pictures 114 million.
Deservedly so. They deserve to take one on the chin for this.
I enjoyed the unintentional comedy, the ridiculousness of it. I like the themes. It was all about, Griselda getting her due, and Victoria getting accepted. I just don't,
Now,
it just didn't balance them with all of that ridiculousness.
I've enjoyed, reading some of the speculation as to why this didn't work, which I mean, I've found hilarious. People about going on about the CGI and the effects or whatnot. It starts with, I mean, that's like saying the Titanic would have succeeded if it had a better color scheme, because this starts with the story. I don't know exactly what the play was like, but this was 15-minute story stretched out over 1 hour and 50 minutes.
But again, he's dealing with a cult following. If he changes the story, they revolt.
Revolt against what? I mean, you've already ran it for 18 years. You can come back again with the original version on Broadway anyway and just say, just kidding about the movie, guys.
Well, yeah, but they've still, this was, when they were making it, before they knew it was going to tank, they figured they'll pull in the cult following and they'll love it, and that'll put them, it will be as successful as the musical. That didn't work.
Which, and that was the problem too. He was appealing to the fans of the musical already. When he really needed, though, was to bring new fans on board so they would actually come and see it when it went to Broadway again.
And appealing to the fan base did work to a point, because I follow a number of people who I was very surprised to find out were musical theater geeks and loved Cats, the musical. They saw it and fucking raved about the movie.
Alrighty then.
They loved it, and
See,
in a completely non-ironic way.
so it was about 15 minutes of story and plot, and about 1 hour and 35 minutes of just characters introducing themselves. Could you imagine any other film or story where it is just the character saying, "This is who I am. Let me tell you about myself."
And it goes back to Eliot, really, that part. It was really just
Yeah.
a list of cat names. The poem is really just a list of cat names.
Right.
It's
And so
insane.
it's you we are we virtually watched people recite a phone book for an hour and 35 minutes
With a lot
with a
of
little
dancing and ridiculous
story.
CGI.
Right. And I mean the music too, it's pretty much 4 or 5 songs at most. You know, with some variations to make it a quote unquote new song. A lot of reprisals, of course. And so there was just so much repetition. They made like a few new songs too, like the Taylor Swift song was not in the original, from what I understand. And I don't know. I think he needed to bring in some new blood for the music. In fact, I don't think Lloyd wrote that song either, so they very well could have had some new music in this without it, being too crazy,
Because she introduced McCavity. I'm surprised that wasn't in the musical. As yourself as a character.
Right.
Sequels and remakes?
Sequels and remakes.
I would be down for a properly animated version of this.
I don't know. I think what was in the 80s should most likely stay in the 80s. It's really what the conclusion from this.
All right.
Just take someone with like a laser pointer to just make them all run after it, I think. In fact, I was kind of regretting that I didn't go see this in the movie theater and bring a laser pointer and
God.
just the whole time. Because come on, that's funny.
Except you would have pissed off the projectionist and gotten booted in like 10 minutes. And you know that because you've been a projectionist.
Right. And as I'm on the way out, but don't you get it? They're cats and it's a laser pointer.
Under brains.
On the brains.
I l enjoyed it as an unintentional comedy. Legit enjoyed a few spots. I'm going for.
What?
I recommend it.
Oh my God. yeah. I think Andrew Lloyd Webber could be one of the first deaths that I might actually
Oh,
celebrate.
God.
I mean, this was really bad. And there's some very problematic things too on top of all of this. I mean, I was gonna give it a whole brain, but then Mrs. Scudder shows me the picture of Francesca Hayward,
Uh-huh.
and it's kind of like, oh, so they made the lead, who was a woman of
Yeah,
color,
a white cat, yeah.
into somebody just completely lily white.
Yeah, true, true.
Ha.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So, I was going to go a brain, but I think that takes a bit away from it,
Yeah,
especially with the whole
I'm deducting a
weird.
half brain for that now that you pointed out.
Yeah, there were some just weird racial things with the cats too that just kind of, I don't know, just kind of grubbed my craw, and I wasn't enjoying it in the first place. So I'm going half a brain.
Okay, and what do we want?
We learned that, yeah, man, you just wouldn't want to be the guy who had to clean the theater when this thing ran.
And I learned that I might be a furry. Kidding, kidding. I actually learned that Idris Elba really likes to get paid, maybe even more than Ben Kingsley.
I think there's a number of people that like to get paid on this. I mean,
Well, but
Taylor Swift, you could tell
she's a pop star.
her thing was done in like a
Yeah,
day, because they probably could not afford her
right,
for
no.
any more than a single
She came
day.
down on a crescent moon, sang a song, that was it.
Then there was like a 2 second scene on the boat.
Yeah,
Done.
okay.
Done. See you guys later.
And, and Judi Dench, I mean, all due respect, brilliant actor. She's sold out before.
Yes, of course.
Ian McKellen was in the third X-Men movie, and I mean, the Last Stand. Enough said.
Yeah.
Idris Elba, I think this is the first time I've seen him properly sell out.
It might be. I'm trying to think of anything else
I
that
mean,
that.
you could argue the third Star Trek movie, but I liked it,
I don't know if I've ever
ended
made it
Star
through that
Trek
one.
Beyond. I enjoyed it. I mean, but I wouldn't, that's nowhere near this level of
Yeah.
paycheck. And he played an interesting character, but anyway, that's it for Cats. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Krull, finally kicking off a fantasy quadrilogy.
This is a movie that I think I've wanted to see for 40, almost 40 years, and I'll probably regret that
I looked it
every
up
minute of
on
that 40
IMDb
years.
before we took a break, before I had to take a break, because we were going to do it when we came back. And the only pictures on IMDb are of the spider. There's a big crystal spider in one scene. It's only in one
Oh.
scene. I've seen the scene. It's not a problem. I'm arachnophobic,
Okay.
for those who don't know. But, it just kind of caught me off guard. Like, all I'm seeing is the fucking spider. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.